copies of the
so.
Even if your share wasn't fabulous, I'd come up with a copy.
Wow, that's impressive. So, I started working with YU, doing a little bit of programming at YU in Israel. And last night we had a talk from someone in the Ethiopian community. Actually, a young man who lives in Gedera, whose wife teaches the Opana. He's living at the Opana in Gedera. His name is Uri El Azar. And he started talking about, you know, why he wanted, he's in Kol El now and he's learning in Or Etzion, and he's just a wonderful, wonderful young man. And he said, he alluded to the fact that he said, when I was young, on my way from Ethiopia to Sudan, which was a 6-year trip, to get from Ethiopia to Sudan to Israel took 6 years. I said, when did you make Aliyah? He said, I left Ethiopia when I was 6, and we arrived in Israel when I was 11.
Oh my God.
Right. I think it seems to me there's this whole story around the original Ethiopian Jews that we just don't know. It is amazing. He said, and in that time, a miracle happened to me. And at that time, I decided, since HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved me, I was going to dedicate my life to serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu as best I could. And he alluded to the fact that there were cannibals involved. So I, on the drive home, it just so happens, like he said, oh, I live in Gedera. So I said, you live in Gedera, I'm going to Yabi Damin. He said, excellent. And so I gave him a ride home. And I said, you didn't really explain in this story, what exactly were you talking about when you said they were cannibals? I mean, like they were saved from cannibals.
Right.
He said that in the Sudan, when they got to the Sudan, they lived in refugee camps. Because what happened is the Sudan realized the Ethiopians were coming. They were very happy. Then they realized they just wanted the Ethiopians wanted to go through to go to Israel. So they closed the borders. They were stuck in the Sudan. So he said that they were in these like refugee camps. And he used to have to work. Just understand, a 9-year-old have to go to work. How do you find work as a 9-year-old Ethiopian in the Sudan? So they used to go cut wood and bring wood for the woman to cook. But the forest was 2-hour walk away. So they had to get up at 3, so they could get to the forest at 5, cut down wood till 7, schlep it back by 9 to sell it in order to survive. It's like, you know, just...
At age 9.
What?
At age 9.
In order to make aliyah.
In order to make Aliyah.
Not the bar stories.
Right.
It's
unbelievable. So he said that they knew that there were cannibals, like on the road, you know, and that one day he wanted to go, his sister got married, so he had to walk to his sister's, he wanted with his brother to walk with his sister to his sister's house. He said it was like from here to a little beyond Gedera. So he said, you normally when all the kids went to go cut wood, they would all walk together. Because otherwise, cannibals, he said, "Hayu orfim v'gonvim anashim." It was very common for them to kidnap and kill people and eat them. So that was food. Okay, so he said, he just told this ridiculously crazy story about how he and his brother were walking, and then they saw these two camels, and it was clear that the camels were these two cannibals, and the cannibals saw them, and they were like rode up next to them, and they had their swords out, and then he started davening. What he said? He said we started praying to Hashem, and he said 2 minutes later he saw in the distance a Sudanese tractor coming to the market, and they started walking towards the tractor, and these Arabs were next to them, and he said it was a nice that they were not able to kill them, and that's how he decided he was gonna, I guess he didn't know at the time, but learn in Kol El and become a Rav.
What were we talking about? I'm sorry.
We're talking about a young Ethiopian man that I met last night. I thought to myself, you know, first of all, what you realize is, if you really want to know what the world was like way back when, until the modern times, just go to the Sudan, go to Africa, right? And then if you want to, and I tell you this story not just because it's an amazing story that's shocking and scary, but also because if you want to understand, I think, the beginning of this week's Parsha, that story is somewhat illustrative. We always tend to extrapolate our own personal situations in order to understand what's going on in the Chumash. You know, why did Yaakov do this? Why did he do that? But in reality, Yaakov's life had almost no connection to our lives. And if you want to know what Yaakov's life was really like, it's probably a lot more like this young Ethiopian man's life was, you know, the things that he had to deal with than the things we deal with. You know, and as much as we try to find, you know, lessons in life and all that, life was hard. You know, and there were bad people willing to do bad things on the road, and there was no security and no safety, and And it's not a very simple matter at all. And I think in that backdrop, I want to study the beginning of this week's parsha of Vayetze. Okay? So, you're going to bring your chumash.
I can't find it.
Oh, sorry. I've got more.
That's okay.
I've got more. Okay. We want to start at the beginning of Vayetze, which is Chavchet Pasuk Yud. Per Chavchet Pasuk Yud. And we're going to notice some things in the text and see what lessons that they have. Because even though Yaakov was very different from us and the things he had to deal with were extremely different, nonetheless, the lessons that he learns are extremely relevant to us and very important for us. Says the Torah, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva Vayelech Haran. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva Vayelech Haran. He went to Haran. Now, what I want to do is focus on some of the parshanim that you've heard before. We're all familiar with a lot of them. Maybe most of us are, some of us are, and I'll go over them. And then try to come at it from a different angle, from a little bit of a different angle.
Where's Haran today?
Haran is Iraq.
Yeah.
No, not Iraq. Maybe Syria, northern Syria.
He went north.
East of Syria. The way
that's
to
like
go...
far.
Right. First, you have to know, he went Harana. What is Harana?
Towards
Haran. Okay? That Yaakov, why is Yaakov leaving his house?
Kill him.
Right, because his brother's going to kill him. So his mother conjures some kind of excuse in order to you know, go, you have to get married, very nice, and make shidduch, and he goes to Haran. So the parshanim pick up on something that seems superfluous in this even first pasuk. Okay, what does it say? What do the parshanim say? If you wanted to know the same information in the pasuk, what could you have skipped? What's that? No, even more. What else could you have skipped? You could have skipped the whole Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Is it relevant where he left? Right? You could have just started the parsha by saying Vayelech Yaakov Harana. Right? If Yaakov went to Haran, doesn't it obviously follow that he also left Be'er Sheva? Now, just for your geography, right? Where is he going? He's going Be'er Sheva. Now, the only way, the main way to get from Be'er Sheva to Haran is up. How would you travel? You would travel on the road.
All the way up past Yericho. Past the Dead Sea.
You would go up the road to Hebron. You would find... Kvish what? Which Kvish is it? The old Kvish, the one that nobody travels now.
Oh, Shishim.
Right, Kvish Shishim. You would travel from Be'er Sheva to Hebron, to Beit Lechem, through Yerushalayim, up the Beit Shan Valley.
Back where he started.
Right.
The
and then up around to Syria. That's the way to go, and that's the way he went. Okay, which we're going to see, which is why it's not surprising that he ended up on Har HaBayit. Okay, so what? But then the Mefarshim are wondering, why does it say Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva? If it's obvious, and so Rashi gives a very famous answer. It's worthwhile to know. It says Rashi, Vayetze. Okay, Lo hayat zarich lichtov ela vayelech Yaakov. Chaman Rashi on pasuk, the second Rashi on Yud. Okay. Rashi is very textually sensitive. All it had to say, the pasuk had to say, was Yaakov went to Haran. V'lama hizkir yitziyato. So why did the Torah mention his exodus, his leaving? Ella, this is very famous. Magid yitziyat tzadik min hamakom oser roshem. Right. And when a tzadik leaves a place, it makes an impression. Shebizman shatzadik ba'ir. When a tzadik is in a city, hu hoda, hu ziva. Huhadara, right? He is its hod, its glory, its beauty, shining. Its shining light. Yatsamisham, when the tzaddik leaves the city, yat panahoda, panaziva, panahadara. Okay, so then, you know, Yaakov, obviously, the way Rashi is learning it, it's a very beautiful midrash, that Yaakov had an impression, Yaakov's presence was felt, and when Yaakov left, it was Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. His absence was tangible in Be'er Sheva. I want to look at it from a different perspective. Look at it from Yaakov's perspective. Right? If I say to you, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, what does that tell me about Yaakov? Okay, what do we know about Yaakov until now as opposed to Esav?
He left his whole body.
What?
He's a whole body.
Yaakov is a Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim. What does an Ishtam Yoshev Ohalim not do? Leave home. Doesn't travel. What does he not also... what does a hunter know how to do real well?
Survive on the road.
Right.
Streetwise.
Right. Have anybody ever read any books about Theodore Roosevelt? No? Oh.
When's it?
So.
That doesn't mean I remember anything about him.
All right. Hunting bears.
Yes. He was a really, really fascinating president. Just a scholar and whatever. One of the things he loved to do was hunt. So they say that, you know, one of the things that he could just survive on his own. Like, you know, and when you hunt an animal, you could be hunting an animal and tracking it for days. So, you know, you go out and you find some place to sleep and you just sleep there. Okay? Now, my idea...
I don't see Obama doing that.
You don't see Obama?
I don't see Obama tracking.
I don't see Clinton or Bush doing that either. You know what I'm saying? That was it.
They did hunt.
What? Yeah. What's hunting today?
They go to a pheasant farm.
You take out your gun, right? You know, like, that's my, like, difference between, like, I have a friend who loves camping, and his idea of camping is, you get to go to a tent and you sleep on the ground. My idea of camping is, I go walk in the woods and then I go to a hotel and take a shower. Yeah. Enough outdoors for me, right? So think about Yaakov. Vayetze Yaakov mibe'er sheva. So what I want to point out from the Rashi is, the Midrash is in its place, and it's a beautiful Midrash, and a wonderful lesson. But what Rashi notices, the Midrash notices, is that this information seems to be superfluous. So I want to try to get a different understanding. What's another understanding of why does the Torah tell us that Yaakov left Beersheba? Because here's Yaakov, he grew up in Beersheba, he was born in Beersheba, he's an Ishtam Yosheb Ohalim, now all of a sudden he's ejected from Beersheba. Now what? Go to Haran. See ya.
Go to Iraq.
What?
Go to Iraq.
Right. How am I supposed to get there?
Right. We don't know if he has any money.
What?
We don't know if he has any money or...
Right. Well, we're going to talk about...
Navigational tools.
Navigational tools. No GPS. No car. Ostensibly, assuming he's alone, how is he supposed to get there?
By
donkey.
Walk. Right. You walk from Beersheba to Haran. You know, it's just it's not a simple matter. He's on the way, and I think it's important to know this because it'll give us a little understanding of what happens later. Vayifga b'makom, vayalen sham kibah hashemesh. He arrives at the place, and he lies down there because the sun comes down. What impression does it give you?
So vayifga doesn't mean that he arrived.
Vayifka literally means...
He ran into.
It means to hit. It means to bump into. Correct. But in the context, let's talk about the word vayifka is going to have a lot of different meanings. In the context of the pasuk, what does it mean vayifka b'makom? What do you have, Yom?
He encountered...
The place. Okay? Vayalen shami lie down kivah shemesh. Because the sun had gone down. It seems out of order linguistically. If you wanted to say the Shemesh went down and then he lied down, what you would say is Vayavo HaShemesh Vayalen Sham. Okay? So what does it give you the impression of? And he lied down Kiva HaShemesh.
Kind of an afterthought.
An afterthought?
Maybe I should stop walking now.
Yeah. Right. The sun had settled. Okay? The sun had set. Look at Rashi for a second. Kiva HaShemesh. See, Rashi is very sensitive to these
things.
What?
Maybe because he was tired.
Even more. Why would it? What do you mean? Because you mean that the sun would be dependent on Pan Yaakov?
Maybe.
You are correct. That is exactly what Rashi says, but not because he was tired. Says Rashi, Hayalo lichtov vayavo hashemesh vayalin sham. Should have said, right? The sun set and he lied down. Kiva hashemesh mashma sheshakalo chama pitom. Suddenly the sun set, shelo ba'onata, right, at the wrong time, kadesh yalin sham. The Midrash says the sun set 2 hours early that day. There's only one other time where the sun is off. When is that?
Shemesh
biki dom dom ve. Yeah, but Emek Ayalon. So, us Shalavimers know that because Shalavim is right next to Emek Ayalon. Okay, but the sun.
We had to memorize it.
What?
We had to memorize it.
When Yehoshua went to attack, who was he attacking?
The police
team. Probably the police team, right? So the sun stayed because the battle was going well. So the day lasted longer.
It's on the way to the airport.
Is it? Emek Ayalon?
Yeah.
That's why it's
called the island. So the Midrash says that the sun set. Why did sun set Kivah Hashemesh? Hashem wanted him to lie there. Why? Because he got to Haram Moriah. Keep going. Whatever. So the sun stopped. Went down. He said, okay, I'll lie down. What he said, Vayikach me avnei hamakom vayasem me rashatav. He took a rock and put it under his head. Vayishkav b'makom ha'ho. Okay, what does mirashotav mean?
From his head.
What? From his head.
Head.
From his heads. Okay.
Yeah, Rosho would be one head. Rashotav would be multiple.
Doesn't it seem like
really
he does? It seem like he used it as a pillow. Okay, I wouldn't use a rock as a pillow. Again, we'll look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Asa'an kimin marzev saviv l'rosho." He used it to make a little what?
Pillow.
Marzev, like a little, I don't know, border or something, gate around his head. She'irah b'pnei chayot ra'ot. What was he afraid of?
You do that with sheep. You make like a stone border.
Don't get me wrong, but some coyotes coming around. Yeah, you got like a couple of rocks around your head. You know what I'm saying? I mean, is that really going
to
help you very much?
Conceal you.
What?
To conceal.
Depends how big the.
Right, chayot ra'ot are wild animals. It seems rather weak. You know, like if Esav would have seen his baby brother just then, you know what I'm saying? Like, right, like out in the field, you know.
What's strange about it is that between Be'er Sheva and Yerushalayim, even in those days, and especially in Yerushalayim, there were people living there. So why is he staying out in the wilderness if he could have knocked on someone's door?
Or stayed in an inn or go from village to village, right?
Strange.
Well, the reason I told you the story at the very beginning is, what would you never, never, ever do if you could avoid it?
Sit out alone in the woods.
Or, and more importantly, never travel alone. I mean, you would have to be crazy.
It's also out of Rivka that she should have sent some servants with him.
Right. Excellent.
They were rich.
Right.
They had slaves.
Right.
Send a few slaves along.
Correct. What? This all raises really interesting, fascinating questions. Like, what in the world is going on? Why is Yaakov on the top of a mountain in the middle of the wilderness traveling alone? And what's his state of mind as he's doing this? You know? Why wouldn't Rivka send him with a bunch of servants? Why wouldn't Yitzhak send him with a bunch of servants? Where's all the money? Okay? It's interesting to note.
There's a midrash that he met like Esav's son and that he call his money from him.
Yes, that's exactly right. The midrash is actually later. I will skip a little bit, and I'll show you the Rashi that the midrash is based on. When Yaakov gets to Haran and he meets Rachel, look at Chavtet Pasuk Yud Aleph. Very good. It is good. Really strange midrash. Vayishak Yaakov l'Rachel. He like, the whole thing is crazy, right? It's a strange story. He goes, he sees her, he's like overcome, and he, you know, takes that huge rock off the well, waters the animals, and he runs over to her, and he kisses her. Vayisav kolo vayevk. Ah! You know, nice to see you too. You know what I mean? So the Midrashim wonder, what is he crying about? Vayevk, look at Rashi. Vayevk, lefi shetzipa beruach hakodesh she'ina nechneset imo lekvura. So romantic, right? He saw that she would not be buried. He just met her, of course, but he already knows they're going to get married, have children, have a wonderful life together, she's going to die first. So he's crying already about the end of their lives. Okay. Davar acher, lefi shebabi yadayim reikaniyot. Because he came empty-handed. Amar, he said, Elazar eved avi abba hayu biyadav nizamim utzmidim umigdanot. Right, when my grandfather's servant showed up here, he was loaded. Right, what did he do with Rivka? The first thing he sees her, here's a bracelet, here's another bracelet, here's a nose ring. Great. And what do I have?
Nothing.
Nothing. Which only begs the question. Where's your stuff? V'fisharadaf Eliphaz ben Esav b'mitzvat aviv acharav lohorgo. Eliphaz ran after him. We're going to see Eliphaz is not the only one that ran after him. Vehisigo. Of course, Eliphaz is a chip off the old block, right? Trained tracker hunter. And Eliphaz catches him. Ulefisha gadal Eliphaz v'chikosho Yitzchak mashach yado. But Eliphaz, his Zaydi is Yitzchak. So how can you kill your second cousin? So he pulled back his hand. What?
Uncle.
Yaakov is his uncle. Oh yeah, you can't kill, thank you, sorry. Can't kill your uncle. It's terrible. But his father said to kill your uncle. So what do you do? Amarlo, ma'aseh letzavei shel Abba. What do I do with my father's commandment? My father told me to kill you. What should I do? Amarlo Yaakov. So Yaakov says, tol ma'aseh b'yadi. Ve'ani chashuv kemet. Tell you what, you rob me blind, and then it'll be like I'm dead. By the way, isn't it interesting that in the Midrash, just look at that, the ani chashuv kemet. Right? There's a lot to that. Like someone without, who's impoverished, who has nothing, is like he's dead.
Is this the source for that?
This is the source of?
Of an ani being like...
No, the ani chashuv kemet is based on the Gemara. See, it's way, the Gemara says ani chashuv kemet. So the Gemara says, well, we know ani chashuv kemet, and like the Gemara's trying to solve a problem. How is it that Yaakov had nothing with him? How is it that Rivka and Yitzchak sent Yaakov away with nothing? How could they send him, like, what, you know, it's almost like hard to imagine.
Well, maybe it's also their way of toughening him up. Here he is, he's been at home the his whole life, he's going to Lavan, he's going to whatever, he's got to run away from his son, he's got all this stories, maybe he needs to, you know what I mean?
Get it's out toughening of up and there's suicide.
Yeah. Say it again, right, it's crazy.
No, but it also does make a bit of sense, he didn't have any donkeys, he didn't have any servants, he's going to carry the stuff, what's just, I mean, it's going to like...
Why not?
Maybe he,
well, maybe he went with this stuff. Maybe he left with donkeys and servants.
And he passed all those too.
Well, if he took everything.
See, here's the thing with you. What do you do with the Eliphaz Midrash, right? You say, oh, you know, this is a clear Midrash. It definitely happened. Was there like some Masorah that they knew that there was Eliphaz and there was this Midrash? Or I view it more as Chazal trying to find a, figure out a clever way to understand why is Yaakov with nothing? Where's all his stuff? There's also a very another...
I come up with a theory that he was in the wilderness and a group of bandits came upon him and stole it.
What?
Like, I can come up with any plausible theory.
Right.
Why this is the situation.
Okay. So, you mean why they come up with this one?
Yeah, like the army comes in history that a group of robbers stole everything from someone in the forest.
Right.
Why can't this be one of them?
Oh, normally they would have killed him too.
Why didn't
Esav
go himself?
Ah, the Midrash says, what is he? I forgot to show you a Midrash of Kiva HaShemesh. Why is it Kiva HaShemesh? One second. Where's the Midrash I'm looking for? Okay. It says the Midrash, Davar Acher, Raglei Chasadab Yishmor, that Hashem guards those who he's kind to. Sheyatzar Lelech LeCharan. This is Yaakov who went to Charan. Shekach Amor HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'hinei Anochi Imach. Because God said to him, I'll be with you. Why? And because Kishiyata Lirdov Esav Achar Yaakov Be'eser Sha'ot. Esav himself heard Yaakov was going. It was Eser Sha'ot, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Hichsa HaKadosh Baruch Hu et hayom v'asa oto erev. So what did God do? Nighttime. Oh, sorry, Esav, you're stuck. You know, go home, it's nighttime. You know, that the God, there's this miraculous, this idea of this miraculous protection of Yaakov. That despite his precarious situation of Esav wanting to kill him, Eliphaz trying to kill him, God only knows who else is trying to kill him. Nonetheless, somehow Yaakov made it to Charan, right? Which is not a trivial matter. It's a complicated matter, and we'll see why in a second. Let's go back to your Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Aleph in Kafchet. Yes. One more time.
The whole thing in the Gemara about
an ani chashuv kemet.
It's not in a negative term, it's just a realistic thing.
What do you mean? They're not denigrating the ani, they're saying someone who is poor.
Yeah, but...
They don't mean poor like you can't...
He can't do mitzvot.
It's not like aser to have certain mitzvot.
How do you like the best of the life? I don't understand what your question is.
The question is...
Like a moral judgment.
Religious Hashem people in the history of Tanakh, in the history now, are poor.
What do you do with ani chashuv kemet? I don't think it was a moral assessment on the part of Chazal. It's more a practical assessment, someone who has to struggle for, you know, first of all, what we consider poor and what they consider poor are extremely different. You know, someone who, let me just finish the thought, and then I'll, someone who has to scrape for, you know, to find what to eat every day, right? He doesn't have the ability to lead a vital life because he's so consumed with just his daily bread, with sustenance, with getting by. And I think that that's what they were alluding to. And I think anybody who, I mean, thank God, like I say it, like, you know, I was listening to this guy last night and thinking, wow, we are so spoiled. You know, like, he said, I said, how do you get home? He said, sometimes trampim. He said, he was going to take the bus last night from Tachana Merkazi. And I said, there's only one bus. It's a 10:30 bus. It doesn't go to Gedera. He said, no, it goes to Kanot, to the Tzomet. I said, oh, you would have tramped back? He said, oh, I would have walked. I said, you would have walked from Tkanot to Gadera? Oh, that's the Tzomet, near to the turn to Kastina. Yeah. Yeah. How long does it take to walk from that Tzomet to Gadera? Like, at 11. What?
Kanot's the one near Gadera.
Is it?
Yeah. The one at the end of the
Tzomet. At the end of the
Tzomet. Oh, I thought he was talking about the other one. What's the other Tzomet? Masmia. Ah, there's a bus that goes to Kanot? All right, maybe. Okay. That's not so bad. Wow, I was like building him up and everything. Oh, yeah. Turn back to Kafka. Yeah, you want to say something?
You know, I think sometimes, like, when we say someone is poor, they, like, I agree with you. Obviously, if you're just trying to find food for yourself or your children, it's like you don't have maybe time for spiritual endeavors. But we always learn, like, oh, you know, even if you're poor materially, what do you have spiritually? So it's like.
The Gemara says. It's a very interesting question.
Psychological studies with the pyramid of needs.
No. Was that in the Roosevelt book?
Yeah. In psychology, there's a pyramid of needs. I think Maslow or something. That the bottom is like sustenance, like food and shelter, and then at the top is like self fulfillment, and that's the whole thing. If you are poor and stuff, then you're only at the bottom rung of this pyramid, and you can't reach self fulfillment because you don't have.
The Gemara clearly says, I've never heard anybody in the Kollel take it as an insult that an ani is domei lemeit. I mean, it's just a practical, you know what I'm saying? They see it as just something practical. But it's
Miriam
interesting.
Like Miriam said before, that you can't do a lot of mitzvot if you're an ani.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, you mean because
like
you need
mitzvot that are related to things? If you don't have
I hate to break it to you. I mean, you open a box of Pandora. Right. It is not necessarily considered laudable to be poor. There's no mitzvah to be poor. What?
No great honor either.
Right.
There should be an incentive.
To work?
To what?
Yeah. I agree. I told you opened a Pandora's box. I mean, don't you think so? You know?
You had a husband in cola.
What? Do you? Your husband's in cola? No, I'm. What?
He likes French fried.
I think that to some degree we have the firm community for whatever reason has deviated from what was to be expected. One of the qualities that the Rambam lists as to become a Navi is you have to be rich to be a Navi.
Physically rich.
Monetarily rich. That's what he says. So we don't
mention
that.
Your mind doesn't have to dwell on daily needs.
Right. Right. How do you know, and it's interesting. One of the things that they said last night is, like, a lot of the Ethiopians, they're not only supporting their wives and their children, they're often supporting their siblings and their parents. So a lot of them, even if they wanted to continue learning, you can't learn if you're worried about things. Because learning requires a certain freedom, right? Even though it's supposed to be pat b'melech tochal, yeah, but not when it's your children or your parents. You know, it's one thing for yourself, but you need a certain, you know, and there's a lot of truth to that. So, I don't know. I think that, my answer is, I think that we need some people to be in Kollel, and I think we need the rest of us to be working.
And to support the people
in Kollel. Unfortunately, the model we've now built our society on is that everyone tries to be in Kollel, and then nobody does anything very well. As opposed to, you know, the other way around. But I digress. Yudal, Vayivgab, I'm going to get myself in trouble. Vayivgab makom, Vayalin sham, so he arrived at the makom. So, of course, what place is this? Ha makom, ba makom. Okay? What is the place? Rashi. Let's look at Rashi, and we're going to do a little traveling. Rashi says, Lo hizkira katu be'ezem makom. Right? It doesn't say which place. Ela b'makom hanizkar b'makom acher. It's like a little play on words. I read it again. Ela must be b'makom hanizkar b'makom acher. Must be referring to the place that was referred to, that was in another place. Okay, what is the makom that's in another place? He says, Hu har Moria. Shne'amar bo vayar et hamakom merachok. Okay, if you look, I did this with my students on Monday. If you look at the section of the Akedah, like Abraham traveled 3 days, he said, Vayisa et einav, he lifted up his eyes, Vayar et hamakom merachok. Again, this idea of makom, this place is referred to as the makom. Why doesn't it raise a very simple question? Why is it called hamakom? Why isn't it called Har Moriah, right? Vayivga, he says, Vayivga b'Har Moriah. He got to Har Moriah, and great, and he fell asleep. Why is it this vague allusion to the place?
Maybe because he doesn't know, Yaakov doesn't
know. He doesn't know any of the places, so what? What we know, we're going back and we're describing. Why do we need to describe it in such a way, whereas we have to figure out what the place is, and why is it never just called, you know, Har Moriah? You know, Hashem said, go to Haram Moriah to Abraham Avinu. And then he gets there, and he says, oh, Abraham got there, and it was Hamakom, this place. Okay, obviously, there's a reason for that. What does Hamakom also allude to? In what? Hashem, right. We refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Hamakom. Hamakom Yirachim Aleihem, Hamakom Yenachim Etchem. So, and somehow, this place also somehow represents the presence of Hashem. What does the word vayifga also mean? Vayifga b'makom is a very, very famous Gemara, very famous Midrash. Look at the next vayifga. Rashi. Ukamo, it says, upaga b'yericho. He got to Yericho, arrived at Yericho. Upaga b'dabeshet. I don't even know what that one is. V'rabotenu pirshu. The rabbis explained. Lashon tfila. The word pgia is a language of prayer. Vayifga b'makom. Kamo ve'al tifga bi. Right? What did Yaakov originate? What did Yaakov create? Excuse him. What did Yaakov create? Which tefillah?
Arvit.
As it says, ulelamdo shetiken tefillat arvit. V'shina ha'katu v'lo katav v'yitpaleam lelamdecha shekhafza lo ha'eretz. He had kvitzas aderech. He got to this place. Vayifga b'makom. But vayifga b'makom also means vayifga b'makom. Mm. What does the word vayifga mean?
He reached out.
Reached out means vayifga?
No, like...
What did you tell me it means?
He hit
God? That means davening.
He cried out to
connection?
Yeah. Like,
to hit God?
Form a connection?
What's that?
To form a connection?
Right, the problem is the word vayifga means to hit. To slam into.
Yeah. It's like God was in his face. Suddenly he was like, oh my God, I'm here by
myself at night. What prayer did Yaakov create?
The night prayer.
Arvit. Right? Arvit is the prayer of the night. Right? Shacharit is a prayer of Abraham Avinu, is of the rising sun, the potential of the day, the beginning of the day, the beginnings, the hope, the yearning for what the day will bring. Mincha, as the sun sets, looking at the day, like turning back, what did you achieve? What's Arvit? Right, fear of the night. Fear of the night. That, how do I get through the darkness of the night? How am I going to survive this? How am I going to persevere?
It seems a little strange, though, because Yaakov was Yoshev Alim, and the implication is that he was always with God. So why suddenly does he... I mean, I know he was out by himself and scared, but... He should have been with God all the time.
It's real easy to be Yoshev Ohalim in the Ohel. Right? It's much harder to be the Yoshev Ohalim in the middle of the night in the wilderness, surrounded by a bunch of rocks.
Well, it shouldn't have been the sudden realization of God and needing God, especially for someone like Yaakov.
Really? I disagree, because I think we all speak about, of course, I be tachon and amuna, and it's great, and it's whatever. And then, you throw a person into a situation of turmoil. So I would say the obvious example that we would have for ourselves is illness. Right? It's much harder to be a Baal Emunah when you're faced with a really frightening potential.
See, I think it's the other way around. I think some people don't pray until they get sick or something. Like, you know, like if things are going well, people don't look for a connection.
Okay, but I don't want to say that. I think Yaakov did have a connection. He was Yosheva Olim. He was connected with Hashem. But then you put it to the test, and it's really you have to find a different relationship with Hashem,
it's different.
Right?
It's a different kind of.
There's also just like a practical side of it, like Lahavdil. On the way to my brother's wedding, my brother and I and my sister got stuck in a blizzard in Buffalo, and for 8 hours we were on a highway before we could even move. And we were not, you know, like, we were in our young 20s, and we were on a highway in a blizzard. We couldn't get off the highway because we were on a bridge, actually. And we were in the...
Did you miss the wedding?
What? No.
Oh, okay.
It was my brother's 2 days. Wedding. I was with my brother.
Oh, okay.
But we were for 8 hours, and you know, the cell phone died out, and we were running out of food and stuff like that. And it's not that we didn't have faith in God. We had faith in God. You know, but like, we also needed to stay warm because it was 20 degrees below zero outside and there was a blizzard.
Yeah, so suitcase full of clothes though, didn't you?
We had a box, someone from Cleveland, a grandmother sent a box of cookies. It's supposed to be a 5 hour
You ate drive. Their cookies!
We ate Nosh and then we had finished up and we were going to friends for dinner and we were 2 hours away from Toronto when this happened and we ate the girls' cookies. We had to like eat them slowly because we didn't know how long and it was night. But the half deal to Yaakov, like it's not that you don't have God in your mind, it's not that you don't believe in God, but technically you're alone in the wilderness. It wasn't 20 degrees below zero, but like, you know, you have to like sustain yourself. Okay, he had to eat, he had to drink. He wasn't a malach. I think it was very normal that like all of a sudden, vayitzgam hamakom, and when he puts down his head, now he can like focus on God. But until now, he's been like, you know, trying to find the way. He didn't have a GPS.
Right. If you've ever gone camping and you've been out in the wilderness, you know, and it's pitch dark, you can't see anything, and you hear the animals, it's terrifying.
Huh.
It can be very terrifying. He didn't have a flashlight.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. No. They took us, we went on the Tiyul, did anybody go on the community Tiyul and go on that, like, the lantern walk? That was the pits.
That was just the most surreal experience.
You liked it? If you enjoyed it.
You know what I didn't like about it was that the Syrian fence was like 500 meters further.
Really? Oh, they didn't tell you that. You can't see anything. We live in, like, you know, in our light. You go out, you can't see anything. It is dark, you know, and you can't move. Like I came back, you know, tell you, I had a terrible time because you can't walk anywhere. Because as soon as you walk, like there's rocks and there's whatever, you just can't see. It's really frightening.
Did you notice how the Israelis offer was wonderful?
Did they?
Yeah.
We're so spoiled. It's not even okay.
Okay.
That's interesting. I almost see it as like when you to hit God is almost to attack God, and to say like, you know, I'm counting on you in a sense. It's almost like an attack in a sense. If you've got like that you owe me this in a sense, so that I'm waiting for you to save me. So it's such an interesting verb, vayifka, especially in the context of Ma'ariv. Right, it's Abraham tikein like tefillah shachrit, then by vayashkem Abraham baboker. The word for tefillah for Abraham is hashkama. Beautiful, get up in the morning. You know what I'm saying? Rise to a bright new day. Right, Yitzchak tikein tefillah mincha. It says vayetsa Yitzchak lasuach basadeh. He went out lasuach. Conversation with God. Lovely. Yaakov arvit shneamar vayifga b'makom. Ouch. You know what I'm saying? It's a different prayer. It's a prayer almost. From the
anger.
Depths of his heart, what?
Like anger, it's like...
I choose... Panic.
Yeah.
Panic. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Panic.
I think it's part of the death to come into that total acceptance of Gamzu Latova. That first you've got to go through the, what are you doing to me and how can you put me into this situation? You've got to work through those feelings to eventually come to Gamzu Latova. If Hashem wants me to be in this position, he's got a good reason. He said he'll protect me, But he has to go through those emotions to reach that
Madrega. Midrash asks an interesting question. I skipped it. Can't bring them all. He says, why did Yaakov run away? Why didn't Yaakov say, Hashem's going to save me? Why do you run away from Mesa?
He's got to do his share.
Very good. He said, because the Midrash says, okay, B'sha'a sh'ata ro'eh ha'sha'a chatzufa. When you see the hour is boiling or burning, lo ta'amod kinegda, elatein la'makom. You don't always fight at every time. You don't always expect. You have to sort of sometimes go with the flow. You know, Yaakov couldn't just, Hashem will save me. Because he won't. Right? You have to, like in life, sort of allow the hour to pass, in a sense. And the Midrash gives a huge number of examples of, you know. So I ask, it's interesting, if that's true, I ask, why did Yaakov leave Beersheba with all his stuff and everything? They couldn't send him off like that. Right? If the whole point was to get him away from Esav, what did he have to do? Leave. Right? Because if Esav's, I mean, he's running away from his brother, and he's afraid he's going to kill him. So you make sure not to see your brother, and you have to go. And it's almost like in the middle of the night. You know, Yaakov left Beersheba. Like, she couldn't send him with all the stuff that she would have liked to. They didn't have, like, you know, money lying around, I guess.
But when he does his tefillat Hashem in the place, what is, he asks for basic needs.
Yes, he does.
He asks for the spiritual needs.
Yes, he does.
Because he's really in need
of that. I want to get to that, actually. That's a good point. So let's turn to Yud Bet. Vayachalom. So he lies down at this place of his prayer. V'hinei sulam mutzarv arza v'rosho magia hashamayma. V'hinei malachei Elohim olim v'yordim bo. As we all know, the vision, he lies down and he sees the ladder or the stairway to heaven, okay? And the angels of God are olim v'yordim bo. So Rashi, of course, picks up on this fact, and he says, if the angels were from heaven, right, what should they first be doing? Going down. It should be Yordim v'olim bo. Says Rashi, no. Olim v'yordim. Olim t'chila, meaning Rashi in Yudbet. V'achar kach, Yordim. First they go up, then they go down. Why? Malachim shelivehu ba'aretz. Ein yotzim chutza la'aretz. V'alula rakia. The angels that accompanied him in the land, they can't go out of Eretz Yisrael, so they have to go back up to heaven. V'yardu malachim chutza la'aretz l'lavoto. Right? And the angels of Chutz La'aretz came to accompany him. First of all, it raises all kinds of interesting issues about angels of Eretz Yisrael versus angels of Chutz La'aretz, and, you know, how are they fundamentally different, and why couldn't they accompany him? I don't know. But, what?
They weren't looking for a Chinook, so they couldn't leave.
They weren't, who, the angels? Okay. Or teaching Torah, right?
You know, it's also odd, it's like, he wasn't at the border.
Yeah.
That's something that I always thought.
He's on his way out. I mean, I guess they're at the Stargate, you know what I'm saying? So they have to go up right now, you know? I don't really, it's a good question. I wondered that too. It's a great question. What's interesting is, really interesting, is that here, Yaakov Avinu, the Midrash is really trying to say, is he thought he was alone. He thought all along that he was on his own.
And then he had this dream.
And he has this vision, this dream, and Hashem shows him, you're not alone. You were being protected all the time. And you will continue to be protected as you leave, as you go into Haran. You know, and it's a beautiful and powerful imagery. And then Hashem says to him, "Ine Hashem nitzav alav vayomar." Hashem's standing over it and he says, "Ani Hashem Elokei Avraham Avicha Elokei Yitzchak. I am the Hashem of Abraham and Yitzchak. Haaretz asher ata shochev aleha lecha enen lizarecha. This land that you are dwelling on, I will give it to you and your children. V'hayazarecha ka'afar haaretz ufaratzta yama v'kidma tzafona v'negba." And your children will be like the dust of the earth, and they will spread forth. Tedbav. And I will be with you. I will guard you wherever you go. I will return you to this land. In a sense, what Hashem says to Yaakov is, I promise I will not abandon you. Why does Hashem come and give him this promise? What I really want to know is, what did Yaakov say? What was Yaakov's tefillah that allowed him, that brought him to this place? And this place is synonymous with Hashem. And what I really want to get to is that what the Torah is trying to convey to us is that when you get to a place, well, Har Moriah obviously is the place, but it's any place. Because you're looking to find a place where it's hamakom, where you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the place. Our job is to arrive at a place where, in the time of darkness, when we're struggling and when we're suffering and when we're so anxious and so nervous and so fearful, we're able to see that Hamakom, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is there nonetheless. And I think that it's not always easy, but I think that that's Yaakov's his message for us. So interesting. It says Vayishka b'makom ahu, he lied down there. So the Midrash says Mahaya Omer. What did he say? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Omer. This is from the Midrash Breshit Rabbah. Chamisha asar shir hamalot shebesefer Tehillim. He said the 15th shir hamalot. My ta'ama. What did he say that? Because it ends. What's the last shir hamalot? Shir hamalot to David. Lule Hashem shehaya lanu yomar na Yisrael. He says, what's Yisrael? Yeah. Yisrael is Yaakov. Sorry, I have to read Shir HaMalot David. Anybody ever read through Kuf Chaf Dalet? There's a very, very, there's a good Aaron Razel song he did to it. But you have to read the words. It's not the last one, I guess, but I guess it's not the last one. It goes from 120 to 135. But he says, this is the Mizmor he said. Shir HaMalot LeDavid. Lile Hashem Shehaya Lanu Yomar Yisrael. If it weren't for Hashem, so says Yisrael. Lule Hashem Shehaya Lanu Bekum Aleinu Adam. Right? If it wasn't for Hashem that was there for me, Haya Lanu Bekum Aleinu Adam, when somebody rises up against me, Azai Chayim Bala'unu, life would have swallowed us up. Becharot Apam Banu, in their anger of us. Azai Hamayim Shtafunu Nachala Avar Al Nafshenu, the water would have drowned us. Right, the nachal, the wadi, the rain, pass over our souls. Azai avar al nafshenu hamayim hazedoni. Those terrible waters would have passed over our souls, would have drowned us. Baruch Hashem shelo natananu teref lishinehem. Right, Baruch Hashem, He didn't give us as food for their teeth. Nafshenu kitzipor nimlata. Our soul escaped like a bird. Mipach yokshim hapach nishbar. From a basket of yokshim. What are yokshim?
Traps.
The pach nishbar va'anachnu nimlanu. We escaped. Azveinu b'shem Hashem oseh shamayim v'aretz. So, like you hear Yaakov saying that prayer. Right? That here I am, and I ran away from Esav, and my brother wanted to kill me, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And he says the Shir HaMalot in the words of the Midrash. And they say those words. He said those words. He said praise to Hashem. And all of a sudden, he falls to sleep, and he has a vision. And what are the vision? The vision is, the thing you saw, the makom you arrived at, right? The makom is really there. And he sees the vision that the angels are with him all along. And then Hashem himself comes to him and says, I promise I'll take care of you. I promise I'll protect you. And I promise I'll get you to the place where you'll get to. Vayikatz vayomar, back in Tet Zion, he woke up, and he said, "Vaykatz Yaakov min Hashem v'yamar, Achen yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh." There is Hashem, is in this place. V'anochi lo yadati, and I didn't know, but now I know. Vayira v'yomar, and he was in fear, in awe, and he said, "Manora hamakom hazeh." How awesome is this place? Einza ki'im beit Elohim v'zeh shar Hashem. This can only be the house of Hashem. This is the gates of heaven. I think that's it's beautiful, and but it's also powerful. You know, Baruch Hashem, none of us grew up knowing the way I started with Uri Elazar, and from 6 to 11, and hopefully none of us ever had such a life-threatening experience with cannibals and any of that, just crazy stuff. But the message of Yaakov, of the despair, the depths on the one hand, but finding Hamakom, finding HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the place where He is at, because of Vayifga Bamakom, calling out to Hashem, and finding Hashem in that place, is a message that's relevant to any of us. And it's not important if it's a physical danger, or it's a spiritual danger. Like very often, I think that we find our place. It's very interesting. The Midrash says, why couldn't he go on? Vayifga Bamakom. So the Midrash says, Bikesh Yaakov la'avor, Yaakov wanted to keep going, right? Ve'as na'asa ha'olam kulo kamin kotel lefanav. To me that sounds like, I really didn't translate it, The whole world seemed like it was a wall surrounding in front of him. Couldn't move. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a physical wall or just like, he's like, he got to this place and he's stuck. You're just stuck in that place and you can't move forward. And it doesn't matter if it's a, you know, a literal place or it's an emotional place or if it's a spiritual place and you're stuck. So what do you have to do in that place? You have to do Vayif Gav HaMakom. You have to dive in Marv. And it doesn't matter what time it is. You have to dive in the tefillah of Arvit, of Vayif Gav HaMakom. Because the essence of the way to extract yourself from that wall, to move beyond, is to call out to Hashem. And to see Hashem in the place in which you are. And to realize that, V'neima l'chei Elokim olim v'yordim bo, that there really is an accompaniment, and there is protection. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu is with us, no matter how difficult it is.
Then, how come, they say if there's no simcha in a person, there's no connection to Hashem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hashem cannot live there. There's no simcha. There's only darkness. So how can you reach out if you don't have that connection?
That's always the conundrum. You know, like, how can a Baal Tshuva do tshuva? How can someone who's a sinner do tshuva? So the way Chazal put it is, you have to reach out a little bit, and then Hashem comes and pulls you out of it, in a sense. Like you open the door, they say in, in the Yamim Noraim, you open it like the opening of a needle, and Hashem will open it, you know, wide. So I think all of us, even if you're like, you know, as down as you are, there's always room for that little bit. You know, it's never gone. Nobody's ever gone, thank God. There's always room to reach out, to find. You know, and I think that it helps for each of us, and it also can help for other people, that we see people. You know, each of us becomes a counselor in ourselves, and we reach out to people, and they're stuck. And this notion of, did you pray? Did you dive into Hashem for help to find an answer to your solution? Because how many times have each of us failed? Right? The tefillah in and of itself begins to bring us out of it. You know, it's just a beautiful and powerful lesson that sometimes we forget, but it's always worth remembering. Okay.